Jacksonville is looking for a new convention center, but where would be the best place and what would be the best plan? Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Jack's Daily Record reporter David Cotton, filling in for Melissa Ross this morning, and we are always live here at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we're sitting down with Andre Wallace, the CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority, and Visit Jacksonville President Michael Corrigan to talk about plans for a new convention center in downtown and what developers have in mind. Get on the line now. The number to call is 549-2937. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at David Cotton. That's at DavidCawton. And then later, author John Champalier is here to talk about his new book, The Daily Six Approach to Reducing City Violence. Plus, as the Jack's Public Education Fund prepares to host Ed Talks, we'll catch up with JPEF and the 2018 Florida Blue Duval County Teacher of the Year. And rounding out our program this morning, we'll tell you what to expect at the next TEDx Jacksonville event coming up in October. All of that is still ahead, but first this hour, a new convention center could soon be coming to downtown Jacksonville. The Prime Osborne Convention Center, deemed to be a little too small and a little too far from the urban core. In 2017, a new convention center feasibility study prepared by Strategic Advisory Group generally supported the idea and recommended some size and scope. It did conclude, however, that until downtown becomes a little bit more of a destination, it may be a little too soon for a new facility. Nonetheless, the Downtown Investment Authority invited interested parties to submit their best plans, and in August, the DIA received three bids from developers, responding to a request for proposals to build a new complex along East Bay Street. That's where the old City Hall Annex and the Duval County Courthouse buildings are now. Now, those should be demolished by March, according to the city. Then you have Jacksonville Jaguars owner Shad Khan and his partners, who want to build the convention center right next door to us here at WJCT at Metropolitan Park. And then finally, there's another proposal for the East Bay Street site to become apartments, a hotel, a restaurant, big mixed-use facility there. Get on the line now. The number to call is 549-2937. Of course, you can join the conversation with us on Twitter. I'm at David Cawton. That's at DavidCawton. So while the question of do we need a new convention center is still out there, this other question of where to put it is also part of that debate. Joining me to talk about this topic this morning is Andre Wallace. He's the CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority, and Michael Corrigan, the new president over at Visit Jacksonville. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me this morning.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, David.
So, Andre, I'm going to start with you. Last week, you were part of this three-member evaluation committee who heard from these development teams who came in. They submitted their proposals and sort of laid out all of the scope and the financing. What was some of the things that you took away from that session last week?
I think the market very much spoke to us with regards to the financing of a convention center. I think a lot of times people just look at what's the construction cost. But basically, you're going to have to borrow the money, and you have to factor in the also interest with the principal for the actual project. So what you saw was basically different methodologies with regards to how to finance the actual project. Some of it, if you want to put it in layman's terms, you can look at it in terms of if you bought a condo, you got all your condo association fees built into it. Or if you just bought your single-family home and you had the mortgage and you took care of all the other maintenance costs yourself. So I think what was very good about this process is in 2018, very different from when I arrived in 2013, where we're not talking about a convention center and we're not talking about one. And the cost can range all in cost from the various different three proposals in excess of $700 million, you know, depending upon the project, all the way up to $1.2
billion. How are these bids going to be scored? I know there was three separate areas.
Yeah, there were actually, I think, five to six different areas. But bottom line to the issue, all proposers could get up to 110 points. So probably later tomorrow or first thing Wednesday morning, the procurement department will reveal to me the rankings of 1, 2, and 3, and I will reveal that to the Downtown Investment Authority Board.
Michael, there are some who say that Jacksonville doesn't need a new convention center, but it is clear that the city is losing out on convention business. The Prime Osborne Convention Center is small compared to some of our regional partners. you guys track those numbers, you know, convention centers, nights stayed in hotels. Why are we losing out on convention business?
Well, David, there's really two reasons we're losing out. One is because of the size of our facility. It definitely is undersized for a community such as Jacksonville, and it needs to be something that need to be addressed for a long time, and we're so happy that we're now addressing it as a community. And secondly is the amenities surrounding the convention center. Almost every successful convention center has a host hotel and restaurants and bars are surrounding the convention center. And I think it's an important part of what we talk about as we start reviewing the possibility of building a new convention center. We need to ensure that it has the amenities surrounding it. It needs to have a host hotel because it was supposed to be one next to Prime Osborne when it was built, and it never came about. So as we look at building a new convention center, we need to make sure that's part of the equation.
What are those cities that we're, you know, always competing with, it seems?
Well, I mean, we're competing with every city, but obviously the super large convention centers we're not trying to compete with, but we're continually losing business to Daytona and Savannah and Nashville and Memphis and Hanumoto communities. But what the problem is as over the decades that we've had the convention center that we have without the amenities needed, then meeting planners continue to forget about us. And as we talk to them and try to convince them to come to Jacksonville, they say, well, we've kind of taken you off the screen of possibilities that we can do because our clients aren't interested.
Well, JP has weighed in on Twitter this or on Facebook this morning, rather. As an event planner who uses most of the venues in the city, a new convention center is needed, but it has to be managed right and have uses for locals. The space needs to be flexible for small groups or large conventions, and being in the core of downtown is key. Now, Andre, I know there was, you know, when we talk about the scope of these things, there was, you know, a certain number of meeting rooms, ballroom space, exhibition space, but there's this conversation right now of, you know, urban core or down here, and that's not something you're dealing with this week, correct?
No, I'm not. We have a very sound feasibility study that concluded that the convention center should be located at the direction where we released the RFP, and so we're going to finalize the process from there. With regards to meeting space, you know, we did request in the scope of services that we had to have 200,000 square feet of exhibition hall space, 40,000 square feet of ballroom space, about 45 breakout rooms. So, but we recognize that also having a conversation about the Prime Osborne, whether or not that still remains online for other different uses is something we can talk about down the line.
Now, when we spoke last week, you know, you said, you know, on this week when you addressed the DIA board, you're going to get these scores, and then, you know, it'll be up to them to take whatever further action is next. Where could this conversation go next after they receive these scores?
I'm going to reveal to the board tomorrow rankings 1 through 3, and I'm going to advise the full board that they ask that their chairman go and meet with the administration. This is a project that is a generational type decision, and due to that magnitude, the Downtown Investment Authority and the administration need to be in alignment with regards to the conversation of a convention center due to the sheer fact of the cost. Both parties need to be on the same page. So that conversation needs to take place between the chairman and the administration.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your last DIA board meeting, correct?
That's correct.
In October, you're going to be taking over at Jack's USA Partnership, which is the Economic Development Division of the Chamber. And from there, you're going to be looking at economic development from a regional perspective. What type of impact does a good convention center have on a region?
One of the things that the convention center would have on the for the region, but let's be specific with regards to Jacksonville as a whole, it further solidifies the downtown for your key city within your actual region itself and allows other development to take place. As we're going out and recruiting companies, and we're basically going to focus a lot on talent retention as well as talent attraction. And when you're looking to bring people in from an age of 22 to 35, they're looking for a certain type of lifestyle. So we've got to make sure we've got that, have certain venues for them. So having a very robust downtown is going to be important for us as we recruit around the country for jobs to come to our region.
Michael, there's a lot of folks who are saying that, you know, there's this big question of what to do with the Prime Osborne Convention Center if we are to move forward and proceed. You know, what are the possibilities with that from a tourism standpoint?
Well, there's already been conversations that's taken place in the community as the conversation about a new convention center started. The number of entities have looked at it and said, is there a possibility that we could go and use that facility? JTA has been very vocal about their interest in making a mobile center part of that center. And that's obviously a use you could do, especially for the original train terminal building. And then you just have to look and see what the highest and best use would be for the rest of that facility. I would not anticipate it would continue in its current use, but would transform into something else.
All right, let's go to the phone lines right now. We've got Stanley on the line. Stanley, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Stanley.
Yes, you know, I keep hearing about the convention. By the way, I met with Mayor Payton, and we was talking about the convention center along with other stakeholders in this city here. But my main concern here, you want to develop, well, number one, the convention center need to be downtown close to the stadium where they're closer to hotels and everything here. And I hope they get everything worked out when it come to the landing so they can work together to develop that area over there. But my main concern is that the input from the community, I heard him say that he was getting input from the community, but that's not true. I do research, especially when it comes to Jacksonville, and Jacksonville is not a city where they are taking input from everybody who are concerned. There are only a select few people that make all the decisions in Jacksonville, and that's why Jacksonville is not moving forward as a city.
Okay. All right, Stanley, thank you for the call. Andre, these meetings have been open to the public, correct?
Yes. The complete process that we had last week was open to the public. Let me back up. When the convention center feasibility study was conducted, we had more than 50 to 75 different stakeholders that were invited in to have a conversation with regards to the convention center. And should the project move forward, there's going to be more public meetings and more conversations equal as well. So there will be complete opportunity for the public to weigh in on this. As I indicated before, this will be a generational decision.
And that next meeting with the DIA is this Wednesday.
That is correct. The meeting is on September 19th, tomorrow at 2 p.m.
All right. Andre Wallace, the CEO of the Downtown Investment Authority, Michael Corgan, president of Visit Jacksonville. Thank you both for joining us. And I don't think this will be the last time we talk about a convention center here in the next couple of months.
Thank you.
All right. We've got much more still ahead this morning. Later, we're getting you ready for the next TEDx Jacksonville event and another new speaker series focused on bringing innovative education ideas to Jacksonville. But up next, we're talking to author John Champalier on how to reduce violence in Jacksonville. Back in a moment.
I'm David McGowan, CEO of WJCT. By now, you've probably heard one of the spots we've been airing as part of our Radio Uninterrupted campaign, asking you to support the wide range of great programming you hear on air. None of us like extended pledge drives, but we don't exist without your support. So we're trying something new and asking for your contributions with these short spots. Call 353-9528 or go online now at WJCT.org and help us shorten pledge drives. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back to the program. It is no secret that the jobs for police officers and first responders are stressful ones. And like most professions, these men and women deal with high levels of stress, anxiety, and sometimes a lack of engagement in the workplace. Joining us to talk about a new program and his book, The Daily Six, Approach to Dealing with City Violence, is John Champlier. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning. John, let's first get into your book, The Daily Six. What is this book about, and how can readers use this in their own lives?
Well, that's how it started. The book started out as a personal, sort of a personal exploration of what I had gone through in growing up and sort of focusing on success rather than significance. I thought if I had enough money that everything else would kind of work out. And that cost me my family, my relationships, all the personal stuff. I looked really great on the outside, but inside it was pretty hollow. And as I grew older and grew, I guess, wiser, I learned that if I was going to really be happy, I had to increase my level of significance and not be as concerned about my level of success. So the book started out as a personal growth book. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I had lots and lots of CEOs who were friends. As I began to change, they began to notice, you know, how come you're not, you know, eating so many Tums as like you used to, kind of thing? How come you're not drinking quite so much coffee as you used to? And I began a process of coaching those guys, and that sort of began the process of designing this book. So the book was a quantitative way in which I could identify what I was doing on a daily basis. Because people were asking, you know, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I just feel better. And that's how the Daily Six began. It was a concept of being willing to see new things and try some new ideas, willing to be uncomfortable with new behavior, because all new behavior is uncomfortable. You know, we try new stuff, but that's why New Year's resolutions only last till about February or March. And then quiet time to sort of keep yourself settled, focusing on the needs of others, be loving and forgiving, be grateful for all things, even tough times, and take action on a regular basis. And that grew into organizational change and then now into this sort of the idea of advanced community policing.
Well, we want to hear from you on this subject. Get on the line now and give us a ring. It's 549-2937. And of course, you can chime in on social media at David Cawton. We'd love to hear from you this morning. John, in addition to using the Daily Six, you know, you're trying to promote, and as you just sort of alluded to, this other program for police and first responders. I mean, I know, you know, we talk about stress is at an all-time high
right.
in the workplace. These folks really deal with stress. I mean, they are put in some very difficult positions. Yeah. You know, how can this program help them in these situations?
Well,
and what is the program?
The program basically takes the concepts of the Daily Six, which I just mentioned quickly, and combines that with developing some simple emotional intelligence techniques of self-management, self-awareness, you know, becoming more aware of your emotional position, being able to identify a feeling. Is this anger? Or is this jealousy? Is this rage? Is this fear? I mean, what is it that I'm actually feeling, and how do I deal if I can identify the feeling correctly, I can begin to work effectively at reducing that level of fear or anger, whatever it might be. So if someone begins to learn the process of self-identification of a particular emotion, they can begin to get better control of it. They can become more of an observer of a complicated and stressful situation rather than, you know, imminently involved in either its successful completion or its explosion. I usually try to equate effective emotional intelligence and Daily Six practices as kind of, if you can sort of think of a parade going down the street, this allows you to sort of stand on the side and watch the parade go down the street rather than jumping into the middle of the parade and screwing the whole thing up. If I can stay emotionally balanced and emotionally centered, then regardless of the situation going on around me, I can be much more effective at dealing with it. Now, the police, I worked on another program like this last year for people in recovery, for the families and the individual addicts and alcoholics. And the thing that made the program really successful was I was able to get some people from recovery to work with me on designing the program. And now what I'm trying to do is get some people from the police world to help me refine the program so that it's not just some guy on the outside thinking
absolutely.
Of something. I mean, I said, this looks really great to me, but I'm not a police officer. And so I would love to get some real honest feedback and some input, because I know the program works. And I know it will give people more tools when they show up at a high stress situation. It will give them more tools to be able to rely on.
Well, of course, we want to hear from you this morning. The number to dial is 549-2937. John, you mentioned that, you know, you've got some statistics, you've done some research on this. What is contributing to this record level of stress and anxiety in our lives? What is that in your opinion?
Well, that's not one of the statistics I have written down, but I'll tell you for sure, in my experience in dealing with both as coaching and in training with individuals and organizations, is that it's the pace that things are moving. People aren't dramatically better at dealing with multiple challenges at the same time, yet we have sort of thrown dozens more things happening to us, whether it be social media, whether it be emails or phone calls or interruptions or whatever it might be. We put tremendously higher levels of stress on individuals to perform at levels that I don't know necessarily are realistic. At the same time, budgets are being cut so that the level of training and the frequency of training are down, so that somebody may get a day of training or may get four or five small sessions on how to build trust or how to diffuse a situation or how to create a more positive environment that you're trying to operate in. And they'll get 6 hours of that, and then good luck, buddy. You know, you're kind of on your own. And the problem is that behavior reverts to old behavior under stress. So unless you've created a really new set of tapes in your head that says, this is how I handle high stress situations forever, if the stress situation is high enough, you will go back to old behavior almost immediately. And that's when these things kind of repeat themselves over and over again.
When we talk about, you know, police officers and first responders, it seems like the trend nowadays is for everybody to pull out their phone.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
We've got body cameras now on police officers. Those are coming to JSO in the next coming months and years. What type of stress does that put on a police officer? An added stress when you've got somebody with a cell phone camera in front of their face.
Well, think about yourself. I mean,
it could go viral.
I mean, just think about sitting in here. If someone was just sitting in here videotaping us every second, I mean, it would, and we're in a very non-stressful situation. So it would create an additional level of stress. If you were just driving down the street and somebody had a video camera on you, sitting in your car, and they were just videotaping you while you were just driving, think of the level of stress that would add. I can't make any mistakes. Oh my gosh, somebody's going to see this. You know, that is the kind of component I'm talking about that adds the stress, that forces people back into old behavior. It doesn't allow you to be consciously calm enough to draw some of the tools you were learning. So there's daily six stuff, or emotional intelligence stuff that you're beginning to learn how to handle complex and difficult situations. What happens when you put somebody on camera or you start taping them, it makes them more nervous, and therefore old behavior becomes much more dominant than newly learned skills.
Well, now some people would argue that, you know, police officers and should just be doing their job as they were trained, and that it shouldn't matter if you have a video camera or a cell phone camera on them at all times while these events occur. I mentioned you had some statistics. I want to hear some of the statistics that you brought with us this morning.
Well, what I was talking about in my statistics is just the level of engagement and the level of performance associated with engagement. And this holds true, whether it be actually one of the people who's coming on the show shortly is the DuVal County Teacher of the Year.
Yes.
And we were talking about engagement and the levels of engagement, and that there are fantastic teachers and there are mediocre teachers and there are not so great teachers. And it's the same thing with police departments, and it's the same thing with almost every group. So you'll find that in an organization, pretty much any organization, that if you have highly engaged people, let's just use sick leave, for example, you know, an engaged person who would be somebody who's comfortable in their own thoughts and their own feelings and their own actions, an engaged person would take, say, 10 sick leave days a year. A person who's kind of neutral will take 11 sick days a year. A person who is disengaged or actively unhappy at work will take 20 to 25 days a year. So twice as much time away from the job as a person who's actively engaged. So it's the same kind of thing. Productivity with an engaged person is anywhere from 20 to 30% higher. Turnover is as much as 60% lower. And I would imagine if you have huge training expenses like the police, fire, I've done some program work with public safety workers, 911, people who answer the phone at 911, their turnover issues are huge. If they could reduce their turnovers by 60%, the cost savings would be immense. So having people who are able to stay calm and stay centered and stay balanced in highly stressful situations will get them handled more efficiently, handled more positively, and the outcomes will be dramatically better for the individual, community, and everybody involved.
A lot of people are going to wonder, well, have you brought these ideas to those in charge, to the sheriff's office, to the fire department, to the city? What has been your interaction there?
Well, I have talked to the leadership at JSO. I've also talked to leadership at city council. I have a good friend who's the retired fire chief here in Jacksonville. We met when he was the fire chief in Washington. We were known each other for many years. And all three of these people, when I've talked to them, have said, this sounds amazing. This sounds incredible. But I have a feeling, like we were just talking, people are inundated with ideas and problems, and they have challenges plus budget reductions and all sorts of other stuff. So when I talk one-on-one to people, I get a tremendous response on, this is great. We would love to have this happen. And then it's kind of, you know, well, here's my phone number, give me a call. And then it just kind of quiets right down and I don't hear much back. I don't think it's a lack of interest. I really think it's more just a lack of the ability to focus on something else new. Because, you know, it's what's the old line of when you're up to your behind in alligators, It's hard to remember that the job is to drain the swamp. And I may seem like just another alligator snapping at somebody trying to get their attention.
So what is your strategy moving forward? How do you get this out to the community a little bit more and maybe out to some of the other groups who could maybe also put pressure to get this program moving forward with the officials at the city?
Okay. Well, thanks. That's a good point. And it's one of the reasons why I'm trying to, you know, make my case today. I'd like more people to hear about it. If someone hears about it and thinks it makes some sense, they could contact me or they could contact somebody they know within the city or within any group that would have high stress situations. So as again, I've said, I was talking with a Duval County teacher out there, and I believe that teachers are in these situations too. They take these wonderful, nurturing, quiet, but very thoughtful people and then sort of put them out there all by themselves in a chaotic environment and say, you know, knock it out of the park. You know, and it's but what kind of training do I have? Everything is kind of sort of be self-generated. Some people will be amazingly successful in that situation, and some people will not. And it's the same with police, anybody who's working on their own in high-stress situations. So what I'm doing is I have a talk to do this afternoon, actually this evening out at Atlantic Beach. I've got a presentation tomorrow to another group, and on Friday I do another talk. So I get up and do a lot of talks to organizations about how this can work as individual change. It can work organizationally in change, or it can work in situations and institutions with high levels of stress where you can sort of take back control emotionally of your thoughts and then your behaviors.
Have you seen examples of workplaces where they really are, you know, taking this issue of wellness and stress and anxiety and being proactive with, you know, helping their employees? And do you see a stark contrast between, you know, the public and the private sector at all?
I don't know that I see a distinct difference in the desire of the private and public sector. I think the private sector has more flexibility. So if they decide they want to have something happen, they simply invest in it. I think the public sector has a whole lot more hoops to try to jump through from, wow, this sounds like a great idea, to here's the funding for it. I think there's a much slower burn to get from point A to point B. I worked with a company last year here in Jacksonville where the owner wanted to sell his company, but it wasn't worth the money he wanted it to be worth. So he hired me. We came in, and it was a highly chaotic, very disengaged organization. Within about 6 or 8 months, we turned that around. People became much more engaged. Turnover almost went away. The level of engagement amongst employees was dramatically higher. It brought buyers to the table for the company. It raised the value of the company, and the owner was amazingly happy that he was able to leave in the same time frame he wanted, at substantially more money than he expected it to be, and the employees had a great time along the way. I mean, the owner said to me, "This is the most fun I've had coming to work in 10 years," and to me, that's what work should feel a little like. It should be positive. It should be, if you can show up in a positive frame of mind, you have a chance of bringing positive energy to the people that you interact with. And I cannot imagine the difficulties it is to be a first responder on any level. I mean, I've never had to do it. So it's just, I'm imagining that it is unbelievably difficult. And so anything I can do to help provide more tools for that toolbox, more opportunities to get somebody to see a situation and learn to think to themselves, I know how to step back from this so it doesn't become a situation I don't want to have to deal with.
Do you find that these are simple fixes, or are these more long-term fixes for companies? Or I guess it kind of varies for different sizes, but are these things that can, you know, these changes can be implemented immediately?
Well, the answer is yes. Yes, it is simple, and yes, it is long term. The idea of being acting in a caring and nurturing way is something that you could begin to do as soon as this interview is over. I don't mean you, but it is something that you could do immediately. But it is something that you would forget to do almost immediately if it wasn't continually reinforced over time. So behavior got here by the way in which we act reinforced over time. And behavior changes exactly the same way. New behavior reinforced over time can become new habits. But I've had people ask me, could I come and do a workshop on building trust in an organization, and I've got 20 minutes. It's like, well, I could explain what trust is in 20 minutes, but your people aren't going to feel any more trusting necessarily. So, you know, the ideas are simple, and that's why I think they work. And I think that's why they have worked over the last 10 years or so I've been working on this. And they have to be simple, and people have to be able to grab a hold of them in an easy way. But just like trying to teach kids how to do homework effectively, you sort of teach them how to chunk their homework. Change needs to be chunked the same way. Today I'm going to work on this. This afternoon I'm going to work on this. Tomorrow I'm going to reinforce this. I have a little card that has the Daily Six on it. And I remember having a friend of mine when I first got imprinted that said, I put it on the refrigerator and every day I look at the card and say, which one of these am I going to work on today? And I think if we can find people that are in stressful situations and give them sort of a Cliff Notes or a cheat sheet or something that they can be reminded of on a constant basis of how they would like to be perceived on a daily basis. And then they can come back and revisit that again and again and again throughout the day. Anytime they feel themselves sort of drifting off the path that they've set for themselves, I think it could be make a huge difference.
Real quick this morning, John, we've got one caller here, Ike from the West Side, who wants to chime in real quick.
Oh, okay.
Ike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, John.
Hey, Ike. How are you?
I'm enjoying the conversation. I just wanted to call in and thank you for the Daily Six. It's made a really big difference in our organization and for me personally. The stuff really works.
Thanks. Ike is the president of the company that I was just describing that we went through the process of working on for the owner, and we took him through the process, sold the company, and Ike was the right guy to step up to become president of the next company. So thanks. I appreciate you calling in. That's great. Is it still fun to go to work on a daily basis?
Yeah. We're having a great time. It's wash, rinse, repeat. I mean, it's the Daily Six, kind of just trying to practice this in all of our affairs.
Ike, real quick, how did this impact your office specifically?
Oh, the
Daily Six and implementing the strategy.
Yeah, the enthusiasm level is and the just the overall job satisfaction, and I can tell you, it's it's not just taking my word for it. We had employee satisfaction surveys that we were, you know, decent on. We were a C. The last employee satisfaction survey that we did, and it's an anonymous survey that we do, we were a 4 out of 5. So significant improvement throughout the company.
Thank you for the call this morning, Ike. John, where can folks find more information about the Daily Six and how to engage with you personally?
Well, the Daily Six is available now exclusively on Amazon. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So there's a paperback and a Kindle version of the Daily Six available. I'm local here in Jacksonville. I don't travel internationally as much anymore as I used to, but I certainly travel nationally. And my email address is john@johnchapelier.com. It's pretty, you know, as long as you can figure out how to spell Chapelier, it's pretty easy to find. So, and I'm happy to get back to people. Sometimes today's kind of a crazy day, but normally I would get back to somebody within 24 hours. So certainly I look forward to it.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us this morning. The book is The Daily Six, and great to hear about this program about, you know, helping first responders and police officers in our community, trying to, you know, reduce their anxiety and their stress. We have got much more coming up here on First Coast Connect. We're back in just a moment.
Good morning. I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge and station manager here at 89.9. While we bring in our next guest and usher out the current one, I'm going to take a few moments here just to tell you that we are in a pledge drive. I know you didn't notice it because we're not interrupting the radio. We're doing our best. We've raised $6,000 thanks to your generosity, but we've got quite a ways to go. We need to raise $60,000 to keep all this great programming on the air. So if we can keep this uninterrupted as long as we can, we will. We may have to come on next Thursday and Friday because at this rate, we're not going to quite hit it. But you can help us get as close as we can, and we will cut this drive off as soon as we hit it. So if you've got the time, go to the phone now at 353-9528. Anytime at all, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go online and show your support for quality public media all across the First Coast. You know where you get it. You get it right from us. 24 hours a day, news and information all day, classical music on HD2, relax on 3, Electro Lounge at night, First Coast Connect, of course, every morning. Lots of great programming that comes to you because of folks just like you. Support us with your financial contribution. So do it now. We're almost ready to get back to First Coast Connect. So take the time now to support your favorite morning show. First Coast Connect voted the best show, the best host, the best station in Jacksonville by Folio readers. If you're one of those folks who voted, now vote with your money. 353-9528.
Oliver had been told that he should call John Donor Dad, but having... having a rough time pronouncing that, he came up with Donut Dad.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, true stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to the program. Later this hour, we'll be hearing about next month's upcoming TEDx Jacksonville talks, but ahead of that, we'll have another discussion right now about some of the more important issues we're facing, and specifically, these deal with the education of our children here in Duval County. Next week, the Jacksonville Public Education Fund is hosting its inaugural Ed Talks to discuss some of the innovative education techniques coming to Duval County. And to talk about all of that this morning, we're now joined by Rachel Tutwiler-Fortune. She's the interim president of the Jacksonville Public Education Fund, and Stephanie Bellino, reading coach at Garden City Elementary, and the 2018 Florida Blue Duval County Teacher of the Year. Welcome. First of all, congratulations, Stephanie, on that designation. That's a big deal.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And Rachel, thank you also for being here this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Now, you know, we have a new superintendent here in Jacksonville, Dr. Diana Green. And this fall, we're going to have 3 new school board members, a new school board chair coming in. You know, Rachel, I'd like to ask you a little bit about what, at this particular moment, is something that these folks need to accomplish right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, First of all, thank you again for having us on the show. And, you know, JPEF is really proud to launch our speaker series at this key moment in public education, the Ed Talks that you referred to before. We really want to inspire the community to raise our expectations for our public schools and to make sure that we all play our role on what Dr. Green calls Team Duval. You know, Duval County has really made huge gains in the graduation rate. We're now at 80.8%. Back in 2009, we were at 55.8%. Today, we're a B district. We were named the top urban school district on the National Assessment for Education Progress last year. And all of that is stuff that we should be absolutely proud of as a community. So in a lot of ways, we may have an outdated perception about where our schools are in Duval County. We have a lot more work to do, however. And based on the way that the state currently measures achievement, proficiency is not the same as passing. So one of the things that we really have to focus on is making sure that we're graduating our students at proficient levels. So we want to make sure they can read and that they're ready for the opportunities they'll find on the other side of their public schooling. So, you know, we're at this critical crossroads. Dr. Green has made it her priority to get Duval to an A rating. And in order for us to improve school quality, our entire community has to play an important role.
And I imagine these are all topics you're going to be covering. Tell us a little bit more about the actual the talk coming up.
Absolutely. So we are delighted for our inaugural Ed Talks to have Geoffrey Canada, who was the founder of the Harlem Children's Zone in New York City. It's an effort to support kids from cradle to career in and out of school. The program has had incredible results. They have actually seen 96% of their high school seniors accepted to college. And what Canada is going to speak about during the program is how communities can support public education. We're also delighted to have Dr. Green join us to share a bit about her vision for Duval County Public Schools.
Now, Stephanie, I want to talk to you specifically from a teacher's perspective. You know, as someone who personally grew up through Duval County Public Schools, I can think of several instances where, and Mom, if you're listening, you probably relate to this too. There were several instances where if I didn't have a particular teacher intervene at a certain point in my life, probably would have gone down a different path. Mm-hmm. But right now we're having an issue with, you know, retaining teachers. I believe the study you guys put out was, you know, one out of every two teachers, you know, there's going to be some turnover within 5 years or so. Why is that? You know, mm-hmm. What is so challenging here in Duval County of keeping teachers in the classroom, good teachers in the classroom?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can speak for myself, and I was almost one of the teachers who left the profession. After 2 years, I terminated my lease. I had walked into my principal's office to tell her I was leaving. And it was in that moment that she took the time to really let me know how appreciated I was and valued and what I meant to my students. We looked at some data and she said, you did this. You, these kids, you know, they grew because of you. And so to have someone really take the time and express how appreciated and valued, I think that's important when we're looking at retaining quality teachers. And the efforts of the community, especially the Jacksonville Public Education Fund and the Eddies experience that I've got to take part in this year with a summer fellowship and the opportunity to meet with school board members and connect with community members. I had people drop books off at my school because they knew that was something that we needed, and pencils and something as simple as candy for a little reward. And so to really have the community on board, I think that's important.
All right, Rachel, real quick before we go out to break, where can we find more information about this Ed Talk?
Absolutely. Visit our website, www.jaxpef.org. That's JAXPEF.org. And we hope to see you at the Ed Talks next week.
All right, Rachel, Stephanie, thank you both for being here this morning. We look forward to the Ed Talks coming up next week. We are back in a moment here on First Coast Connect.
Community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
The Youth Crisis Center is dedicated to providing healing to those who are hurting from life's unfortunate events. Information about getting help or transforming a life through a donation is available at ycc.org.
Hi, I'm Michelle Corum. Allow me to take about 30 seconds of your time, and that's about all it's going to be as we get closer to our goal during the Radio Uninterrupted fall campaign. So far, you haven't had to miss a second of the programs you love. If you have already donated, thanks. If you have not, please don't wait. We could be finished with this in the next few days if everyone chips in right now. We need your support. Call 353-9528.
Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is accused of sexual assault, and for some Democrats, it feels like deja vu.
Have we not learned anything in the decades since Anita Hill that these are serious allegations, these are credible assertions, and I believe Dr. Ford?
I'm Audie Cornish. What we can expect from the Senate's public hearing, that's this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Arthur Ashe remains a hero for millions, an athlete slash activist who personified calm and dignity. What would he have made of Serena Williams protesting at this year's U.S. Open, or Colin Kaepernick taking a knee? What Arthur Ashe taught America, next time on 1A. Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to the program this morning. We are now going to talk about one of our annual events here in Jacksonville. It's an annual event about ideas we're spreading. TEDx Jacksonville brings together people from all around the region to discuss a lot of important ideas, challenges, and opportunities in our community. And guess what? The next TEDx Jacksonville Conference is coming up next month over at the Florida Theater. And to talk about it, we are now joined by Philip Robbie. He's a National Design Director for RS&H. He'll be speaking at TEDx Jacksonville, and Gene Grimsley over at TEDx Jax. Thank you both for being here with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Philip, I want to start with you. For those, I guess, who aren't familiar with TEDx, you know, what kind of opportunities does it bring for folks? I mean, you're going to be speaking, obviously. What does that bring? What type of opportunity does it bring for folks?
Well, the TEDx allows for that crowdsourcing kind of subject matter. So I think when you reach out into the community, and they oftentimes have been living with the subject matter, my particular subject matter unbuilt, for years, this kind of gives you a forum for sharing what some of those things are. I think it's a really important forum. The subject matter I'm dealing with is the unbuilt. We oftentimes as architects see all the things that we do build, but there's a huge amount of material that is unbuilt. And it's probably a shared condition. I'm sure that although in my profession I have some unbuilt items, reflecting back on why those are unbuilt and what could have been done. But also, you know, there's unwritten, unsung, uncooked, undefended. There's a lot of uns. And so it gives me an opportunity to share some of those things that I've been wrestling with.
This next event is a conference on October 20th at the Florida Theater. Gene, you know, who should attend these TEDx events and why should they be there?
Well, everyone should come. I think sometimes people self-select themselves out of it, thinking, oh, I need to be a rocket scientist or I need to be a big, successful business person. If you are a curious person who likes to learn about new ideas and share those ideas that resonate with you, then this is the conference for you. It's your dose of brain food.
What can folks expect just beyond the talks?
Well, we take great effort to make it an exciting, engaging day for all of our participants. So beyond the 12 speakers, we have three fantastic artists who will be performing. We have lots of engagement activities in order to make sure that people aren't just connecting with the talks, but they're connecting with each other. We will have lots of opportunities for great food. We partner with local restaurants and local caterers to make sure that you have a true taste of Jacksonville.
And Philip, I want to go back to you and give you a little bit more time to talk about what you'll be speaking about. You know, especially right now in a city like Jacksonville, for what I cover at the Jacksonville Daily Record is development and all new plans and, you know, new buildings coming up and this and that. What are you going to be talking about specifically again?
Well, there's three projects from my personal portfolio for my personal history. And then there's three projects that are related to the Jacksonville area. I'm still in the process of developing those. But, you know, when you look in the studios of the firms that are here and work in Jacksonville, there are some incredible projects out there. And I think, you know, the most creative projects, they're frail. You know, these ideas as they merge, they really need to have that support. And that creative process is really delicate. So I'm excited to bring those three projects to light. And then there's three projects that, or three efforts that I've had throughout my life, and I've never really shared any of those. Some of these, you know, it's just, as my wife said, it's just not the right time. And maybe this is the time. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, please come attend.
Yeah, I know sometimes those challenges are what can spur a great idea later mm-hmm. down the line. And how have you been able to overcome those challenges a little bit? I don't want to give away your talk, but you know.
Well, you know, these TED Talks, you live with the subject matter right up to the day you hit the submit button. And then that's when the luge ride begins, you know. We have coaches that coach us through these things. And but that subject matter is, even though you live with it, you sometimes finding the right way to convey it is what the coaches really help us with. And I'm still in that process of pulling together a lot of the content and bringing it forward in the most convincing way I possibly can. You can be really good at what you do. You still have to be good at conveying that. And I think that's where the TED group really helps you.
Well, and speaking of the TED group, I mean, this is really there's a lot of local names associated with it. There's going to be some regional, national folks. Who else is going to be speaking, and how can we find out some more info about it?
Well, you can find out more information by going to TEDxJacksonville.com. In addition to Philip's talk, which I'm very much looking forward to, we have just a wide gamut of topics. We have one of the premier nanotechnology scientists. She's out at Mayo Clinic. She's going to be coming to talk about cancer treatment at the nanoscale. We have this phenomenal sophomore from New York who is coming to talk about his passion for discovering other planets. He's one of the few people to have discovered a circumbinary planet. He thinks that we need to do more of this because he thinks the Earth is going to go away and we should be looking for it. We just have a wide range of folks from London, Dublin, national and local speakers.
All right. Well, Gene, Philip, thank you so much again. The TEDx conference this year is going to be October 20th over at the Florida Theater. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you
so much.
All right. And that is our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Quorum runs the boards. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Piotr Shevchik. Next on 1A. And I'm David Cotton for Melissa Ross. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM, Jacksonville, your community, your world.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.